to allow our preference. If we examine the messages from the Universal House of Justice addressed to the countries of this continent announcing the goals of the second phase of the 7-year plan, we see that almost all of them include the goal of achieving a great and unprecedented increase in the number of avowed believers throughout the country and from all strata of society. The message to this conference clearly states that in their respective home fronts, the Baha'is of North America should intensify the drive to attract the masses to God's holy cause, to provide the means for integration into the work of the faith, and should become standard bearers of an embryonic Baha'i society which is destined to gradually emerge under the influence of the integrating and civilizing forces emanating from the source of God's revelation. It is to be expected then that Baha'is everywhere are giving a great deal of thought to this most important goal, and that much of Baha'i conversation throughout the world is about the nature, the principles, and the methods of teaching, and a constant search for activities that would lead to the acceptance by very large numbers of people of the truth of the Baha'i revelation. Given the dimension of this ongoing consultation and search, I can only hope to contribute during these few minutes with a few ideas that some of those present may wish to incorporate in their reflections on the subject as they strive to formulate specific plans of actions that each one of us has to adopt in the field of teaching. It may be useful, in general, to organize our thoughts about teaching from two different points of view. From the point of view of the individual teacher, and from the point of view of the Baha'i community. From the standpoint of the individual, of course, we all know that teaching is a paramount duty of every Baha'i. Say, "Teach ye the cause of God, O people of Baha," are the words of Baha'u'llah. "For God has prescribed unto everyone the duty of proclaiming his message and regarded it as the most meritorious of all deeds." However, it seems to me that as we meditate on the nature and the importance of teaching, we reach a point when we look upon this most meritorious deed as more than a mere duty, and we become truly enamored with teaching. Certain deeds enjoined by Baha'u'llah as duties are in fact natural and spontaneous expressions of Baha'i life, in the same way that a rose is the expected outcome of a rose bush, and the beauty finally expressed by the flower gives meaning to all the life that goes on in the plant, and in the same way that the melody is the natural expression of a musical instrument, many deeds, such as prayer and such as teaching, are the expected outcome of the growth and maturity of every individual Baha'i. It is in this sense that I would like to suggest that we consider teaching as a natural and expected expression of faith. Absolute faith in the validity of all and every aspect of the revelation of Baha'u'llah, in the efficacy of the medicine that the divine physician has brought for the ailments of humanity, and the promises that have been made so explicitly by the central figures of this faith, and in the power of the covenant that guides and strengthens every believer who rises to teach the cause and changes the hearts of the listeners. But if teaching is the fruit and the expression of faith, it should not be surprising that success in teaching is also proportional to the degree of faith. The power of the Word of God changes the hearts of men, but the faith of the teacher, reflected in every detail of the way he or she teaches, is a vehicle that helps this word reach the hearts of the listeners. Faith is the magnet which draws the confirmation of the Merciful One, says Abdu'l-Bahá. Service is the magnet which attracts the heavenly strength. It is imperative then that every teacher, but especially those who wish to participate in plans with the goal of achieving unprecedented increase in the number of avowed believers, reflect often on the subject of faith and learn to measure the efficacy of each step in the balance of faith. For the processes of mass teaching and consolidation have to be examined through a different lens than the usual events of life lived in limited circles.
You're losing your translator, sir. Could you slow down and speak a little more softly?
The farmer of many acres of land must have a broader understanding of the principles of growth than the one who tends to care for a single tree at a time. In the same sense, teaching is the natural and inherent expression of love. The love of God leads directly to love for all of humanity. And if this love is not to remain an abstract intellectual thought, it must result in the ardent desire to serve His children, and above all, lead them to the recognition of the manifestation. Let all eyes rejoice, are the words of Baha'u'llah, and let every ear be gladdened, for now is the time to gaze on His beauty. Now is the fit time to hearken to His voice. Proclaim unto every longing lover, behold, your well-beloved has come among men. And to the messengers of the monarch of love, impart the tidings. Lo, the adorned one hath appeared, arrayed in the fullness of His glory. O lovers of His beauty, turn the anguish of your separation from Him into the joy of an everlasting reunion, and let the sweetness of His presence dissolve the bitterness of your remoteness from His court. But then again, if teaching is a natural expression of love, it should not be surprising that success in teaching is proportional to the depth of the love of the teacher. It is essential that every Baha'i teacher, especially those involved in expansion and consolidation among the masses, should constantly reflect on the nature and the intensity of this love, its purity, its selflessness, and its freedom from all restrictions. For it is not so difficult to love a few who are like oneself, one's intimate friends, whom one gradually leads to the understanding of the Baha'i revelation. But to patiently teach and nurture a large number of people of different backgrounds, of different habits, of different cultures, and of different intellectual preparation necessarily implies a special measure of love. In the same sense, teaching is a natural expression of knowledge. For knowledge grows as it is shared with others. Personal study and reflection increases knowledge, but certain avenues of understanding open up only in the application of knowledge. In teaching, especially when teaching is concerned with setting in motion immense social processes, as it is in the case of expansion and consolidation among the masses. O wayfarer in the path of God, are again the words of Baha'u'llah, take thou thy portion of the ocean of His grace, and deprive not thyself of the things that lie hidden in its depths. Be thou of them that have partaken of its treasures. A dewdrop out of this ocean would, if shed upon all that are in heavens and on earth, suffice to enrich them with the bounty of God, the Almighty, the All-Knowing, the All-Wise. Once again, if teaching is the natural and expected expression of knowledge, it should not be surprising that success in teaching is proportional to the knowledge and understanding of the teacher. However, for those who wish to be effective in mass teaching, this understanding has to go beyond personal knowledge of the truths of the Baha'i teachings and principles, and should include an ever-increasing understanding of human nature and the mysteries of a spiritual growth examined in the light of the Baha'i revelation. For those who are to plan and administer programs of expansion and consolidation, this knowledge must also include insights into the nature of the spiritual and material forces that move the masses and that lead to a dynamics of growth totally different from growth achieved in small circles of friends. Surely within the writings of Baha'u'llah, of Abdul Baha and Shohi Effendi, and the guidance from the Universal House of Justice, must exist the basic knowledge that if applied diligently and continuously by believers everywhere, will lead us to the methods and the programs for teaching and consolidating large numbers of believers. Hundreds of thousands of human beings, not only in Africa, India, or South America, but also in the United States and Canada, have shown that they are willing to accept Baha'u'llah the moment the message is presented to them in a way as to touch their hearts. Surely an objective observer would expect Baha'is everywhere to be constantly trying to apply the gems of wisdom enshrined in their teachings, to achieve new visions, to find new methods, and to design new programs in order to deepen large numbers of believers and to make possible for these great willing masses to enter the faith. Such an observer would be totally surprised to find so many believers who simply shun the issue of mass teaching or even oppose it with a simple pretext that we do not know how to deepen and consolidate them. Let us re-examine our concepts of what it is to be knowledgeable in the faith and achieve the kind of understanding and knowledge that will help us bring in the large masses of humanity into the faith. Now clearly, teaching as we have considered it as the natural expression of faith, of love, of knowledge, of devotion, of obedience, and of a spiritual joy cannot be interpreted simply as silent teaching, teaching by example. It is true that the example of our Baha'i lives should be the greatest guide for all of humanity. But surely we cannot imagine raising the cry of Ya Baha'u'l-Abha in silence. Teaching involves the use of the creative word. It involves utterance. It involves the exposition of eternal truths by a loving and kindly tongue. Now, although success in teaching the masses depends so heavily on the qualities of the teacher, it would not be sufficient to examine it merely in the light of the activities of the individual teacher. Teaching the masses, far more than teaching an individual friend, is the natural expression and the natural outcome of unity within a community. Unity of thought, unity of purpose, and unity of action. It involves the gradual development of plans and constant evaluation and revision by the institutions of a national community. It implies an accompanying process of constant consultation about the methods, the concepts, and the principles among the teachers and the institutions at the local, regional, and national levels. Rather than speaking about the nature of such plans in abstract, it may be useful to briefly examine a national teaching plan recently adopted by the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of Canada. In formulating these plans, this National Assembly examined carefully a number of experiences, both positive and negative, from the past, and consulted upon concepts that are being employed by groups of Baha'is in different parts of the continent. From this analysis, emerge the beginning of a long-term plan, which will undoubtedly entail many stages and will constantly be adjusted.